Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting from our studios in New York City. I welcome you. Every day, we take on the journey of health and healing, and that's what we're going to do today. Also, if you're taking certain drugs, and if you haven't been warned of the dangers, I'll give you a heads up on a few very popular ones that, well, they should be of concern. In fact, one drug I'm going to be mentioning in a few moments, they believe could be as deadly as Vioxx. Remember Vioxx? Killed between 60,000 and 500,000 Americans in a four-year period. So I'll give you the latest on that. Then artificial light from digital devices at your computer lessens sleep quality, University of Houston. We'll talk about that. And then cacao flavonoids, that's your chocolate. It's a new nutraceutical, University of L'Aquila in Italy. And a lot more on health and healing. And by the way, we're also every day, Monday to Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, and then Tuesday from 7 to 8 in the evening, where we do the Progressive Commentary Hour, which I might mention is the most downloaded show I do all week. One theme, very hard-hitting today, we're going to be speaking from Japan with a man who is going to tell us all about the history of the Federal Reserve and our central banking system and the bankers and why they get bailed out and we don't. And he is just absolutely the best expert I know on it, and very, very easy to understand. It's not technical. You won't want to miss that. In any case, we film this also, but the film isn't shown in live time, and there's a reason for that, because we have a huge number of people who download the videos off YouTube. They like to see the whole hour. But some people just like health and nutrition, anti-aging, preventing disease, natural approaches to overcoming disease. And that's mainly Facebook. So we edit right when we take our break. Then that goes up the following day or later that same day on Facebook. And as soon as we can get the other one up, generally in the same day, it goes up on YouTube. So if you like social issues, environmental issues, commentaries, then you like the whole show. If you just want health, we've got that for you too. Now, a lot of people right now are listening to this program over a portable listening device. Now, if you're older and not really into computers, you might just want to get a voice enhancer, a sound enhancer on your regular telephone. And others are using a cell phone. Just turn on the speaker. And you're out and about traveling. So how do you do that? Let me give you that phone number. So anytime, live, noon to one, you want to listen to the show, here's the number you call. That number is 712-775-6850. 712-775-6850. Now, 95% or more of the people every day who downloads the show listens at night after work. That's what our analytics show. So here's the number anywhere in Canada or the United States. You can download from the archives up to 5 programs. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. I'm going to do 2 commentaries today. One is an expanded commentary after watching Al Gore's new film, An Inconvenient Truth, the sequel. And I'll share some insights with you may not be aware of. The other is I'm going to show you how the media, both the alternative and mainstream media, and major corporations, and the medical community and the scientific community work together to control the message. And I'm selecting AIDS. I can select cancer, mental illness, ADD and ADHD, autism. I can select any one. But this one's an important one, so I'm going to focus on how they control the message, in spite of the fact that they're consistently wrong and they're never held accountable. So at least you will have this information. Now, while I'm doing this, I'll be showing you But again, you'll have to watch this in the archives, or you have to watch it on let's say, a YouTube, to see all the graphs and charts and photographs, but I'll describe them. So if you never go to any of those other sources, at least you'll know what I'm talking about. And then you can share it with other people. And by the way, I want to thank all of you for sharing the insights that you get on this program. I stopped doing interviews in 2000. I had done over 1,000 interviews before and got good press. And I also stopped writing articles for magazines. I'd written hundreds of articles. And I wanted to use the internet instead. And so it's the internet where I published articles. And it's the internet where we share this information. No advertising, no publicity, no feature stories, no public relations at all. And yet you ought to see how many people each month tune in. How many people have downloaded this show? And by the way, I'll give you a figure that was 4 years old. 54 million people have downloaded and listened to the show. Now it's double that. So we're talking about close to 100 million people. 100 million shows have been downloaded, I should say. So word of mouth, keep sharing. Let's begin. This is from Washington University School of Medicine. And it's about a popular heart drug or heartburn drug. It's called proton, proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs. And here's what you didn't know. They've been linked to a variety of health problems, including severe kidney damage, bone fractures, and dementia. And now a new study from Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis shows that long-time use of the drugs also associated with an increased risk of death. Millions of people in the United States take proton pump inhibitors, which are widely prescribed to treat heartburn and ulcers and gastrointestinal problems. And unfortunately, the drugs are available over-the-counter under brand names like Prefacid and Nexium. And here's the issue. They did a major study, and they found their big problems. Quote from the study, "No matter how we sliced and diced the data from this large data set, we saw the same thing. There's an increased risk of death among the users of this." That was the senior researcher. So how would I approach this, and what's the good side of this story? Why do most people have heartburn? Let's go to the cause. Most people have heartburn for these reasons. First, because they drink coffee. And coffee, though the coffee bean, the raw organic green coffee bean, is very rich in what we call ORAC, which is the measurement of antioxidants. So it's rich in polyphenols and nutrients. So by extracting just the nutrients from the coffee bean, you're doing yourself a great deal of good. But once you heat it, those things are destroyed substantially and you release different acids. It also has the problem of caffeine. So when caffeine and this acid hits the hydrochloric acid in your stomach, it is highly acidic and anabolic, and it creates gastric reflux or indigestion. Or what that really means is hydrochloric acid is splashing back up into the esophagus. Now, if you look at your lips and inside your mouth, that's mucous membrane. That same mucous membrane goes down your trachea and your esophagus and your stomach and through your intestine. It's not good with acidic foods. So that's one big thing. And also, when you're taking caffeine from coffee, it's a diuretic. So very important micronutrients like selenium, molybdenum, things you need, are flushed out of the system. And also it tends to create edema. It imbalances the sodium-potassium pump in the cells. So when you start drinking a lot of coffee or caffeinated beverages, you can get swelling around the body and hold a lot of extra weight until that is water weight until that's thrown off. Another thing that causes this is eating a lot of sugary foods, because sugar doesn't require digestion. It goes right into the system, immediately absorbable. So let's just say that you had something else with the sugar. Let's say you had a piece of cheesecake or a donut or a roll. That has to be broken down in the stomach. you have different enzymes like pepsin and trypsin, amylase, lipase. These are enzymes the body produces to break down these large molecules into smaller and smaller ones. But if sugar's in there, it interferes in this normal process. And therefore, you start combining the sugar, which will create acid indigestion, and you create hydrochloric acid. Now you get some severe indigestion. So people who are diabetic, people who are overweight, people who tend to eat a lot of sugary foods, tend to have a lot more gastric reflux. And then you have people who that overeat. They just are eating large quantities of food, far more than what your body can digest and handle. That creates GERD. And a lot of carbonated beverages definitely created, all those sodas. So the answer is stop doing that which causes the problem and then go in there to heal it. Now, what can heal it? First and foremost, your probiotics. About 5 to 10 billion probiotics 3 times a day. That's good for it. Then 3 glasses of raw cabbage juice a day. Cabbage juice has what we refer to, though it's not officially a vitamin, as vitamin U. But it's extremely beneficial at healing ulcers and inflammation within the stomach and Helicobacter E. pylori, the bacterium that can lead to stomach inflammation and cancer. And it does the same through your whole intestine. Aloe vera, the whole leaf aloe vera, that means the gel and the leaf. Remember, if you just have the gel is only 10%. The whole leaf is 90%. So most of your nutrients are in the leaf, not the gel. So you take them together. And you can get this in any number of brands, and you drink 2 ounces 3 times a day. Then you take the herb marshmallow, not marshmallow, marshmallow. It's an herb. And you take that at the same time. You also can take some fennel powder and anise powder, put it all in the same drink with a little ginger. So with ginger, with apple cider vinegar, with all that I just mentioned into a drink, a smoothie, that is magnificent for healing the stomach and stopping this. You can also take some cayenne, small heat units, and that'll help as well. This study comes from Singapore Institute for Clinical Science, and it was published in Clinical Nutrition, and it says that if you have a lot of folic acid and you don't have B12, that's not good. That doubles your maternal diabetes risk. Pregnant women who don't have B12 but have a lot of folic acid have, quote, a 97% increased risk of pregnancy-related diabetes. So here's the solution. Take one of each in equal amounts. What do I suggest? You could start at 500 micrograms of B12, 500 micrograms of folate. Take them together. That's terrific. And if you have problems with energy or you're vegan, you can take 1 milligram of each, and that'll help you. That way you're not getting an imbalance of one and not enough. Now, this I found concerning. This is from GreenMedInfo, a very quality source of good science, and it says, our medicalized approach to pain may be putting us in harm's way. However, there are safe natural approaches that can ease painful conditions. But that's fine. It says, is ibuprofen as deadly as Vioxx? Vioxx, V-I-O-X-X, deadly drug. And you know what's bad about Vioxx? The manufacturing scientists, the people in the corporate hierarchy, the lawyers, all knew that it was bad and deadly. And it was a Dr. David Graham, who I went to Washington and interviewed at the FDA, who warned the FDA and said this is increasing heart disease and stroke rate. And instead of saying thank you, let's warn the public, let's tell the manufacturer, get this off the market, let's ban it. Instead, he, Dr. Graham, was attacked with inside the FDA and sent to the hinterlands where he was just pushing papers, no longer had any authority position. Here's what this says. I'll quote this. non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which include the over-the-counter pharmaceuticals like ibuprofen and aspirin, rank among the most widely used pharmaceuticals worldwide. Their chief mechanism of action is in the inhibition of two forms of the cyclooxygenase, or COX-2, COX-1, COX-2, also known as the inflammatory agents. And then it talks about how it's a $10 billion a year industry. A lot of profit to be made. And then it talks about why these are dangerous. And I posted the article on our website. And here's what the scientists are saying now. Quote, by decreasing the vasodilatory production of COX-2 may lead to an increase activity, and that could be deadly. And then it goes on to, there was a multi-centered, randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind trial that led Merck to withdraw Vioxx from the market, demonstrating that these events were substantial. And so now they're looking at the same information and saying, wow, these other non-steroidal anti-inflammatories are also deadly and could be killing a lot of people. We know they kill about 25,000 to 35,000 people per year that we know about. But could they be killing more than that? This meta-analysis that they're showing here shows that it could be extremely dangerous because they cause platelet aggregation and other issues. So my suggestion is don't use these. These are dangerous. They're natural approaches. And like ginger, 250 milligrams of ginger is enough to help stop menstrual pain. And the ginger rhizome, R-H-I-Z-O-M-E powder, you take it four times a day, was found as to be as effective as the medicines that are used, including 400 milligrams of ibuprofen, relieving menstrual pain. And also 25 drops of thyme, T-H-Y-M-E, vulgaris, essential oil given every 6 hours, was as effective as 200 milligrams of ibuprofen for pain. And then you have white willow bark for back pain, magnesium at 1,000 milligrams, some citrate for migraines, and then your functional food like wild lettuce is terrific for turning off pain. Chicory root is terrific for turning off pain in the body. So we do have natural approaches, and tart cherry. Tart cherry is loaded with what we call anthocyanidins. And these anthocyanidins, at about 400 milligrams, are good. I would say a tablespoon of tart cherry concentrate twice a day for arthritis pain, osteoporosis pain, back pain, head pain, muscle pain. And then the best of all is black cumin seed oil. I've had people with severe pain from pancreas diseases, including pancreatitis and cancer of the pancreas. And these people have to be on very high opiates. And even that doesn't always work. But I find that when they take one tablespoon of black cumin seed oil, mix it, you can't take it straight, it's just too strong. But if you mix it in a smoothie, and you do that three times a day, it can turn off pain and inflammation, suppresses cytokine activity, suppresses tumor necrosis factors. It helps turn the heat down in the body when there's pain and allows healing to occur. So that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
We got it together, didn't we? We've definitely got our thing together, don't we? Isn't that nice? I mean, really, when you really sit and think about it, isn't it really, really nice? I can easily feel myself slipping more and more waves. That super world of my own.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting from our studios in New York City. Now, if you haven't seen the new movie produced and written by Al Gore called An Inconvenient Truth, the sequel, I recommend it. There's some very good things in the film, including the beginning where he goes up to Greenland and he walks with a climatologist expert. And what they're looking for these like rivers that not as big as a, don't think of the Ohio River, maybe 30 feet across, but they pour down into the glacier going clear to the bottom, and that creates a skid. And that means that those glaciers are now able to move closer to the sea and right into the sea because you've got vast amounts of water. How much water? Billions of gallons a day from just one, and you have tens of thousands of these all over Greenland. So Greenland's melting faster than any mathematical model to date has even anticipated, and it shows you this. That's very important. There's another scene in the movie that I absolutely recommend because, boy, it was very fortuitous for me. He got to interview the mayor of Miami and some of the council members, and it showed him in the middle of the daytime with no storms at all. And the motors are going 24/7, and they're still not able to get the water out of the streets. That's 24/7, and that's a $500 million project. And he says, well, you're just taking water, and where are you putting it? Now, you got to visualize this. There's Miami Beach, then there's South Beach, and separating the two is a bay. Well, Miami Beach is a large area, and that water's going right in there. South Beach is a sliver, very thin sliver. In some places, only 8 blocks wide. And so water comes in on the Atlantic side, comes up at night, the high tide floods, that's picked up in the sewers. The sewers are overflowing, and then that's pumped back into the bay. But hold on. The Atlantic and the bay are connected at the bottom of South Beach. That's where I used to live for 15 years. So I would look every morning as the ships went out, and they would go out from the bay, the port of Miami, and they go right out into the Atlantic. So how in the world can you say you have something that's working if all you're doing is taking water that's filling in the front of the boat and throw it over your shoulder in the back of the boat? The boat is sinking. And then so they said that the next idea was, and by the way, I found it very refreshing because I gotta say thank you to the mayor of Miami. You were honest. Most people would not be. But you also mentioned that the reason that you were investing in building roads, higher roads, was because you're dealing with, I believe it was $22 billion in real estate that would be adversely affected. Here's the issue, and Al Gore brought this up. You know, well, this is only a stopgap. You know, you can't surround your whole city from the ocean. It's just not going to work. It would take hundreds of billions of dollars to do it effectively. So their idea was, we're going to create a higher elevation. All right, what's higher elevation in Miami? Maybe 5 feet? 4 feet? 3 feet? Do you really think that spending another $500 million is going to make a difference? Here's why it won't work. First, the builders took years to get the money to develop the land, then buy the land at high prices, then build these big buildings. So you had to get the financing, you had to buy the land, you had to get all the permits, it's really permit heavy. Then you have to build these structures. Then you have to get work with brokers to tell people why this is the best views and it's terrific and don't worry, you know, the sea's going to stay the sea and Miami's going to stay Miami and everything's fine. And then people come around from other parts of the world who may not do their homework. May think everything's fine. Maybe they're not in global warming. And then people start to see what I saw. But when I saw it, and I saw it every single year for 15 years getting worse, I realized if you wait too long, then your value of your property is going to collapse. And so I got out and, you know, went to a more sustainable place. But all the people I spoke to, including the building that I was in, a small building, it's only 9 stories, they were staying because they just didn't believe all this stuff about the weather and rising. Oh, it's going to take 100 years. I read it in the paper, 100 years. You know, we'll be long dead. No, it's happening right now and has been, and it's going to get worse because once the paper starts showing how bad it really is, and once the people start thinking, we better move someplace else, and you have all these unsold apartments, and the value goes down, and the tax base for the county goes down, then where exactly is the county and the city going to get the money when the governor doesn't see, he's a global warming denier, Charlie Crist, doesn't believe any of this stuff and hasn't done a thing to help down there. So if you're living in South Beach, Miami right now, my only word is a word of caution. Do your homework. Watch An Inconvenient Truth, the sequel. See for yourself and go down the Alton Road any night, any day. The pumps are going 24/7 now. And it's an impossible situation. So think about where else in life you should go and then have a reasonable, timely way of finding the next place. You don't have to do it tomorrow, but at least start the process. So when the problem accelerates, you'll at least be ahead of the curve. Because there are good places to live in America. I wrote an article, 60 pages, on the best places to live. If you're a family, if you're single, if you're young, if you're old, if you're retired or still working. You know the healthiest city in America, according to the latest study? Naples, Florida. Also one of the cleanest. Some of those beautiful beaches, nice people, very quiet community, not hot, not flash and dash. Miami's flash and dash, and noise and music and fun. And that's a quiet community. It's been one of the most coveted places in America to live for the 13 of the last 15 years. That says something. So get away from the cities. If you want quality of life, if you want quality time, if you want to slow down, go to the smaller communities that are sustainable. Another thing I liked about the film was that it showed the desertification of the United States, and it's getting really bone dry and aquifers are drying up, the very thing I've been sharing with you on a regular basis. And then it showed, I think, the most seminal message in the whole film was at the Paris Environmental Conference, and the Prime Minister of India, who's a real neoliberal, I mean, he is a capitalist. And he said, very frankly, he said something to the effect, I'm not quoting him verbatim, but he said something to this effect. Why should the people in India not have the same opportunity as the people in America or any other country in Western countries to enjoy quality of life and a growing economy? And for that, we need fossil fuels. By the way, they're planning on putting 400 plus coal-burning factories in India, and those are the worst polluters of all. And so they weren't going to vote for it. Well, now you look, the second most populous country in the world is India, and it has massive pollution, massive. There are wonderful people in India, and there are some people that are not so wonderful. And a lot of the people in India, we're talking about hundreds of millions of people, believe that if you have a baby girl and you're poor, that's not an advantage, and the girl's killed. I can go into what I don't like about India, but there's a lot more I do like about India. But now the India of that you might have appreciated in the 1950s or 60s, today, massive drought. It showed farms that have been there for eons that are now bone dry. Well, those people have to go someplace, so they go into the cities. So you have in some cities more people living in ghettos than you have living in New York City and living on the street and 12 people to a tiny room. So they really have it rough, and nothing's being done to help them. I mean, nothing. But also nothing's being done to reverse the environmental disaster there. They did put in some solar panels, and he showed a solar company, and he made a deal with the solar company. You actually see him on the telephone saying, can you help India out? Because the World Bank wanted to help India, but charge him 12% interest. Whoa. How bad is the World Bank? Bad to the bone. So those are the things I liked about the film. that I feel are constructive, and I commend Al Gore for doing that. Here's the other side of it. Al Gore did not once mention the real solutions. It's not solar. Why was he only speaking about solar, the whole movie Solar? Not a word, not an image, not a piece of B-roll on geothermal. Nothing on wave power, which is phenomenal. We have enough wave power to power all of our needs in the United States and around the world. And nothing at all about, not a word about stopping methane from animal production, which is more than cars, planes, trains, buses, and ships combined. So I'm sitting there thinking, how could anybody not say stop deforestation and replant? In one recent day, in one 24-hour period, in India, they planted 66 million trees. And this was not a for the whole country. This is just one community. And I've said all along, the four things that will cause global warming to be addressed honestly and quickly: stop eating animal protein, stop deforestation, start a massive campaign of planting where you hire local people at a living wage, the government does it, and then you plant in every community in America, every county in every state in America, all 50 states and Puerto Rico, we can put into a new green manifestation, a green Marshall Plan, because those green trees and shrubs, they act as carbon sinks. They take carbon dioxide out of the air and put it into the soil, and then it acts as a trap there. Also, you can start using certain types of algae, because algae can absorb carbon dioxide, and it stays. It doesn't release itself. In special ponds. Now, these are not ponds where you'd have fish because the algae destroys the oxygen in the water, but there are ways of doing it in a controlled fashion. So none of this was mentioned. Why? And stop consuming so much. And stop the coal-fired plants. Yes. Here's what you didn't know about Al Gore, but I'm going to share it. And the movie tried to make him look like this. Oh, shucks. Let's all put a straw in our mouth, a hat on our head, some bib overhauls, and let's go down there and shovel some hay. You know, there he is taking his own luggage through the airport on a commercial flight and staying in these stark little rooms. Reality. Al Gore owns a $7 billion hedge fund. Of all the funds in the hedge fund, they're almost all in high-tech or polluting industries. Al Gore was doing business with Qatar, which is one of the most carbon-intensive polluting places on Earth per population. They're the richest people on Earth. Of all the countries in the world, it's a tiny country, but of all the people in the world, the people in Qatar make the most money per person. I think it's around $177,000 per person. And they have the world's largest supply of natural gas. They pollute because everything has to be air conditioned. Everything has to be done artificially. There's no natural anything in Qatar. And he does business with them. In return, they buy, because they own Al Jazeera, and Al Jazeera buys his non-listened to current television network. It had no listeners. In fact, my radio show right now had more listeners than they had viewers in 24 hours. And they give him $500 million. Oh, and he's on all these board of directors, including companies that pollute. Oh, and his hedge fund invests in polluting companies. And oh, the one green company, the one solar company, just happens to be the one that he lobbied and got, I think, $2.3 billion of U.S. our taxpayer to fund it. Okay, I'm not opposed to that, but he's a primary stock owner in it, and it's part of his hedge funds, and that's the one shown in the movie. So gee whiz, of doing something really green and solar. You show one company that you have a financial vested interest in, and you fly on private jets, but you don't show that. And you had a 1,000% increase in your bills at your Tennessee farm. We only got to see a little tiny road and a little tiny room, and yet you're holding seminars with 600, 800 people, and you show throughout the whole movie. These are high intense educational classes, yes, to promote commercial solar. So you believe, you're a good advocate, Al Gore. I respect your commitment to advancing the position of solar. You do a good job there. You're intelligent. You've done your homework. You're a motivating factor in front of a stage. But it's about solar. And it's about how much money you make. It's about how much your companies make. It's how many board of directors you're on. And so therefore, really caring about the environment, why do you eat meat? You're morbidly obese. You waddle onto a stage. You clearly have something wrong with your leg because it showed throughout the film, and this was shown over a period of time, you were in a very slow gait with a big belly. Wouldn't it be nice to be a vegan and promote veganism to those thousands upon tens of thousands of people that come to take your workshops to promote your concept, and all that gets drawn into your little world? But there are other things that concern me about Al. Al represented, along with Bill Clinton, what were called the New Democrats. The Gore-Clinton team was completely in favor of free trade. Al, did you forget how you were out there condemning labor and supporting NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization? You were Clinton, Bill and Hillary's co-tag team presidency. You were their point person. Good looking, articulate. Your father was a really strong representative of Tennessee's interest in Congress. And he also was against the war, Vietnam War. Good for him. But you had a cow farm. You grew up with that. Not a problem there, too. That was part of your heritage, and I don't hold that against you. But long ago, you should have given that up, because that creates more pollution than all the other industries in the United States. As one example, you also said, we can be buddies with Goldman Sachs. Remember that? I'm quoting, quote, we too can be buddies with Goldman Sachs and Wall Street, end quote. We can be buddies with Goldman Sachs? Why would we want to be? These are vulture capitalists. These people have never done an honest day's work in their life. These people pride themselves on their mercenary, great white shark attitudes. These are the people that bankrupted Greece and lied about it. These are the people that only do dirty deals. No one should respect Goldman Sachs. But that's where you were. And you promoted globalization. You were the cheerleader of neoliberalism. Now you are a corporate capitalist and not a politician. But you've used all your political clout to further your capitalist ideals. So you believe global warming is real? Absolutely. You're a good spokesperson to warn people about global warming? I don't know anyone I'd put in your place. You go first in my list of people that I would respect getting up in front of an audience and convincing people, including skeptics, that there's a real reason to be concerned. But you're doing it from the mindset of a global corporatist, capitalist. So you want to see global warming curtailed or lessened, but you know it's going to take decades, and we don't have decades. Have you ever invited Guy McPherson and some of the other people that we've had on this show, some of the leading climatologists in the world, who say we have anywhere from 5 to 13 years before we end up with mass extinction of animals? It's happening now. The desertification of the whole Middle East. I was asked recently for my advice from someone who I cannot mention about what would I suggest to help countries in the Middle East with greening. And I gave him my advice. Whether you use it or not is up to them. I have to set aside my utter, complete disdain for the rulers in all the Middle Eastern countries versus the people who would be the first to suffer, the populations. They should not be held in some form of contempt because of their rulers. So if we can help a country, we have a moral obligation to do so because we're helping the people. So here we have the neoliberal free trade theory, which Gore exposes completely, contradicts the solutions to tackle climate change. Free trade, laissez-faire, capitalist theory, and environmentalism are utterly incompatible. Even Bill McKibben once called Gore a hypocrite regarding climate change and fossil fuels, but that's how it went. He's as much of a hypocrite as Obama. I feel your pain. I'm supporting you. And then he promotes the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He promotes the TTRP, promotes all these treaties, and he is anti-union. And yet he goes out there and gives the great song and dance and gets union people voting for him. 2 months ago, when Obama attended a food and climate change. Now, listen to this. This is why I think you got to know the details. You got to pull back far enough from a problem to see it in its entirety. Here's President Obama. Didn't I tell you he'd be the first billionaire ex-president? Clinton's tried, but they came close, about $180 million. And that's without their foundation, which was $1 billion. But Obama's on a fast track. Obama in the next 2 years will make more money than the Clintons have to date and all other presidents combined. Here's how it works. He was given, in Milan, for a food and climate change conference, $3.2 million to give a speech, relatively short speech. Okay, fine. If that's what people want to pay him, that's their business and his right to take it and theirs right to offer it. I have no say-so in that. That's not my business. I do not condemn people and what they're able to get based upon their market value. But he also had a private jet, 14-car convoy, and 300-plus security staff all coming with him. That's 300-plus staff, security staff. You're no longer president. You're doing a private lecture. What was the carbon footprint of that private jet and all those people? That's the hypocrisy. So basically today, Al Gore is a climate change advocate who invests in to profit off his advocacy. He invested in 14 green tech firms, which benefited from a $2.5 billion in loans, grants, and tax breaks as part of Obama's push to jumpstart renewable energy with public money. His hedge fund firm, Generation Investment Management, started in 2004 and based in London, not the United States, is co-run with Goldman Sachs executive David Blood, who headed Goldman's $25 billion asset management division. So Al Gore's firm, Generation Investment Management, and Goldman Sachs executive David Blood were supposed to originally invest in sustainability, including clean energy and water scarcity and poverty. Since then, and perhaps from all the wealth acquired, more heavily focused on healthcare, Colgate-Palmolive, agriculture, John Deere, IT companies like Microsoft and Google and Amazon. Hold on a second. What am I remembering? Forced labor, slave labor. Sunday's newspaper showed 100 people on top of Foxglove, which they used. That's where their cell phones are made, threatening to jump off and commit suicide because they were treated so badly. So you're concerned about the environment, good, but you're not concerned about the people making cell phones because you've invested in those firms. And as long as they make a profit, you don't care about what happens to the people or the environment. And what about the people in Africa who are being exploited for the minerals to go in these cell phones? Is that not a part of the global problem, environmental problem? What is to me? And one of the funds, including Apple, 50 million shares in Exxon? So let me think. Exxon, what did they do wrong? Who are they? Who's our Secretary of Treasury? Is that a guy that used to run Exxon? Oh, it is. And what about the Valdez? That was Exxon. And what about being the most successful oil company in the world? Exxon. So you're getting shares, 50 million, from a company that is one of the world's major polluters and creating global warming. How does that work? What kind of contradiction is that? also, what does it say when someone who champions himself as a savior on climate change has a $7.1 billion hedge fund that is invested in these stocks? IT stocks, 45%. Healthcare, that's your money. Make money off people's disease. All right? And medical shares, 29%. That's 80% of your hedge fund's portfolio. So where is that 80% helping the environment and people's health and organic farming? Oh, and also, let me think, weren't you a great advocate of one of those little companies that tell us that we need more genetic engineering? What is Monsanto? Yeah, that's it. You're a major spokesperson for Monsanto in your background. Monsanto and GMOs. And you're also one of the largest clean energy stocks from Cotter Investment Holdings as the largest shareholder. You had the most stocks in Cotter's? And that's a subsidiary of Cotter Investment that owns Al Jazeera. And so that got you $500 million. And your first venture investment company invested heavily in those companies that made the most profit to gain from cap and trade bills. So, fly in your private jet, but make a film showing you going coach. And remember, Al, some of us have memories. Some of us do scholarship. Some of us actually look at the total context of what a person's doing. And from what I see here, back when you and Bill Clinton, you basically were the international ambassador to Clinton, or for Clinton, and you promoted and expanded globalization on behalf of companies that Washington was heavily invested in. And you also were on board with the Clintons' push for Monsanto's agenda in both Washington and his foreign policy overseas. You personally persuaded the French to accept GMOs when the country was originally adamantly opposed to it. And oh, you didn't complain to the world when the Clintons bombed Bosnia and Kosovo. So you see, it's a mixed message. Parts of the film, I would recommend watching the film. Absolutely. Parts of it are very good. And he's a very articulate and committed spokesperson. But man, what you could do for the world and environmental movement if you became a vegan and started having those conferences to encourage farmers to get into growing vegetables instead of animals. And look at wave power and geothermal as helping solve our problems and stop consumerism and go towards a growing hemp. Could you imagine with your political power and connections, hemp forests can grow 4 times faster than a regular forest, and they're non-polluting. And hemp is one of the strongest materials in the world, and it's healthy. The hemp seed, the hemp oil, you could do all that if you chose to. So just some thoughts. Again, it's not black and it's not white. It's just, you got to know the whole story. Now, I'm going to save my healing aids naturally for tomorrow because it's going to take more time. But what I'm going to do now is I want to share with you, we're going to have a guest on tomorrow, Dr. Jonathan Latham. He got on late today, and I didn't know that he just popped up, but it's not enough time, so we want to give him a lot of good time. But instead, I want you to hear John McCain, the part of him that is not the hero that he's been made out to be. These are from his buddies, including former prisoners of war. And what they might be saying, because it's not highly articulated, is when McCain got out, and he used the fact that he had been a prisoner of war for his political ambitions. And then he put the brakes on going back and having a full investigation of what happened to all the other prisoners of war that were never accounted for when there was information coming out that they existed. They were being moved around. And I would have thought that being a prisoner of war, he would have done everything humanly possible politically to try to get that resolve to bring those if they had died, their remains back to their families, and if they were still alive, to get them back. He was an obstacle at every juncture. But you wouldn't know that unless you heard the people who were prisoners of war in New McCain. Here's what the networks will not play for you, and I will.
No apologies, though, for a musical parody that many around the world took as a true sign of his thinking.
Bomberan, you know, bomb, bomb, bomb. Anyway, when veterans are together, veterans joke. And I was with veterans and we were joking. And if somebody can't understand that, my answer is please get a life.
I'll tell you, what's not said on the television and will not be said on the television is how much Vietnam veterans and POWs hate John McCain.
The Senate felt compelled to set up the select committee, and that it took them 9 months to set up the committee, mainly because of the opposition of Senator McCain, who was bitterly opposed to any attempt to find the POWs, which is remarkable, seeing that he was a POW himself.
No instance would he ever, ever give in and say there were POWs left behind. And my first question is, how would he know or not know? So just that which is reasonable, he never exhibited, and I don't know why. Maybe it's a guilt complex. Maybe he promised the Vietnamese something. Okay, and I don't know what it is. And maybe he actually believes that. That would be the saddest of all.
He probably did more harm to the idea of trying to get the truth out than any other single person through the efforts he did to block the release of classified intelligence dealing with the POW-MIA problem.
McCain stepped in and, in effect, made it harder to get documentation. That certainly hurt us because we had hoped for a massive release of documentation.
Many, many documents were held back for no reason, and our goal on the committee was to just dump this stuff, to declassify it, literally, to the public. But, of course, they withheld information from the committee. The U.S. government held all kinds of information from the committee, withheld information from the committee. I know that for a fact.
He didn't want nobody to check his background, because a lot of POWs that were with him in the camp said he was a collaborator of the enemy. And he didn't want nobody looking into his background in the camp, what went on in that camp. That stuff is still classified, so nobody can see it. And he just had it classified forever, so nobody will ever look at it.
Even POWs we knew who wanted to see their own debriefings were not permitted because of the McCain regulation.
But where did McCain get compliments for doing this? The bureaucrats at the Pentagon. Right. Because it put a workload on them. It put a workload on them for missing in action people. And did we need that bill to handle a Scott Spiker case? Oh, you bet we did.
And also what it did, and this is what he really opposed, and if you remember the contentiousness we got into him in his office, was that it would hold the bureaucrats accountable by penalty of law.
That's
if
right.
They lied or if they withheld information.
That's right.
And he fought tooth and nail to protect those bureaucrats.
Yes.
Because they were protecting him.
I could never understand that. Why would we, if someone was guilty of withholding information that would help us to solve the mystery of what happened to an MIA and did it deliberately, why would we not want to prosecute that person? So I could never understand it. I thought the language was written. I know Bob Dornan had a hand in it. I thought the language was written very well. I supported it, fought for it hard in the U.S. Senate and mostly on the Armed Services Committee where we debated it. But it was watered down to basically where it was almost worthless.
Now, one of the things that happened with that bill is that we were submarined. The House side, we passed it with no, I don't believe anybody opposed it. It was a pretty much unanimous vote.
401-0 on the House, with every single Republican who is serving, sponsoring it, and about a third of the Democrats.
But on the Senate side, we had one person standing in the way of getting in positions that would have been very tough on government bureaucrats who didn't tell the truth. And that one person was Senator John McCain.
John McCain and John Kerry both were not pursuing this at the, with the same approach that I was.
He insisted that no committee be set up unless he was chairman. Obviously, his intent was to kill everything.
Okay, I appreciate you inviting me here, but what I don't understand is this: you're supposed to have a committee of 12.
All my congressmen from Connecticut walked out. All the senators were on that panel. They all walked away. McCain took off. Kerry took off. All that evidence was coming out of Korea because they knew that if they came and listened to the truth, they'd have to keep the hearings open.
They didn't want any information. So they weren't interested in doing anything with the information other than trying to discredit it.
North Korea did not return a large number of American servicemen at the end of the war, and that some of the men left behind were sent to communist China and to the Soviet Union. Internal documents and statements made at the time also show that our government believed that men were still alive in captivity, and until only a few months ago has kept that reality from the American people. It has covered up what it knew through a pattern of denial, misleading statements, in some cases lies. And by doing so, with regard to the Korean conflict, it broke its commitment with the people who put on the uniform to fight for the freedoms and protection that we and our allies enjoy today.
What I found interesting was that, coincidental to Kerry running the committee, Vietnam gave to Kerry's family sole rights for the negotiation of all real estate issues within Vietnam.
We do know that when he was there, that he cooperated with communist news services in giving interviews that were not flattering to the United States.
He made those transcriptions, and in the transcriptions, I heard a POW who heard them coming into his cell and said, "Oh my God, is that Admiral McCain's son? Is that the Admiral's son? Is that Johnny telling us that our principal targets are schools, orphanages, hospitals, temples, churches?" That was Jane Fonda's line.
Okay, that's just to give you the other side. So, the reason that a committee did not go forward, even though every member of the House of Representatives says, yes, let's find those missing POWs, it was John McCain who prevented that from happening. And also kept his records under wrap and key, top secret. Why? Well, because the story he is told doesn't seem to match the story that other POWs who were there with him had to say about what his experiences were. In any case, I just want you to know that there are more issues involved than what a person says on their own behalf when they're promoting themselves to be the superhero. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that.